Talking Amazing, the podcast all about deep and joyful learning from the team at Bird Brain Technologies. I'm your host, Sarah Fitzhenry, robot fairy godmother and all-around education enthusiast. Bird Brain is known for its groundbreaking technology for students, but this podcast is all about the grown-ups that guide and inspire them. And I have a guest today that is working in a field of education that I know nothing about, and nothing excites me more than going into a conversation knowing nothing about it, because it means I'm about to learn so much. So today we are talking to Isabel Haynes, the Global Program Manager at Florida Film Academy. Welcome, Isabel.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Oh, thank you for being here. I have so much to learn about film, and I'm really eager to hear how much education at the Florida Film Academy looks like education in the classroom or in a college or in a preschool. Like, I have a feeling that they all have some things in common, but I'm not sure.
Absolutely.
So yeah. I can't wait to learn. Awesome. So Isabel, who are you and what is your teaching story?
My teaching story started as a summer camp counselor, actually. Ooh. I was a camp counselor for FFA many, many years ago. And I was pursuing degrees in different areas and working in the world of like different. I actually have a master's in counterterrorism. So my career story kind of goes like a little bit all over the place, but I was always a camp counselor and I always came back for the summer. And you know, the pandemic happens, and unfortunately my position at my old company, I got laid off, as many other people listening can probably relate to. And so I did a couple things until I was like, you know, I really like Florida Film Academy, FFA, I really like what they do. So I came on full time and I was like, it's only going to be for a little bit until I get back into the world of, you know, government research analysis. And now I'm like, oh, I really like this. So I'm staying. And that was about a year ago. So it's been just about a year of full-time work with FFA, and it's been super exciting. We've like opened up a whole new branch, FFA student travel, since I started. So I started as a camp counselor and now I run the programs with the kids. It is super exciting.
Wow. Okay. I always love hearing the fascinating journeys that people take to get to where they have currently landed. But a master's degree in counterterrorism leading you to being a program manager at a film academy might be one of the most interesting jumps that I've heard yet. Do the two jobs have anything in common?
So the full disclosure is that FFA is a family business. And so I was one of those people and I was like, I'm never going to work for my parents. And so I have, you know, I went off into the world and I was like, dang it, what they do is really cool. So I actually applied like with my name not on it. So it wasn't like, it was like a blind hire kind of thing. Cause I was like, if I'm going to get this, I'm going to deserve it. But yeah, you know, it just sort of, I always said that I wouldn't, you know, as much as I love education, I didn't really want to be in a classroom because I love the hands-on work that I get to do with some of these kids. And then I realized that the classroom is everywhere. Like, why would you not want to be in a classroom? Because the classroom is everywhere. And I was like, so that's when I was like, okay, these programs are really cool. We started doing them for our film kids because we started as just a film school. And then we were approached by some pretty cool tour operators from overseas. And now we run like STEAM programs. So I run physics, I run life sciences, I run film, week-long programs, all education-based, obviously, in the theme parks originally. And now we're branching out. We have London and Paris next year, Vancouver, Tokyo, New Zealand. So we kind of like the last 3 months, we've kind of exploded into a whole bunch of new things. So
oh my goodness, that is so exciting. So I was doing a little bit of research into Florida Film Academy before we met. And what I found, I really like this. I mean, it sounds a little bit like what we do at Bird Brain. Our mission is to inspire and promote excellence in creativity and visual arts through education, application, and real-world opportunities. Students learn the power of visual communication through the framework of film and visual production, applying key skills such as reflective analysis, problem-solving skills, critical thinking, and teamwork. But now it sounds like you're taking those skills and going even bigger than film.
You know, it's funny because we've always kind of gone bigger than film, but sometimes when you say the word science to people, it freaks them out a little bit.
Oh, science, well, I math, am very aware. You know? Yes, yes.
And so for a really long time, we did left brain teaching under the guise of right brain academics, when in reality, they're all the same thing and they're always going to be interconnected. And recently, there's been this amazing push, like STEAM education, women in STEM, like this amazing push for these, you know, quote unquote, left brain academics. And now we're like, finally, like, we've been doing this all along and you finally realized it and how amazing it is. So we branched out. I mean, obviously the owners, most of our staff members are film based. I don't even know what I am anymore with my master's. I just run a really secure classroom. So it's interesting when it's sort of, I guess, not to go all over the place, but I guess to boil it down, like showing people that science and math can be found in absolutely everything. So putting the A in STEAM, you know, I teach photography using geometry. We go on roller coasters and I teach them physics. Like, it's a really great way to make science and math and every other, you know, engineering and all that kind of stuff accessible to people who didn't think it was accessible. Like, I was always an artsy kid. I was a theater kid, not to out myself, but so, you know, that side of academics was always so scary. And now we don't have to hide it behind anything. It's like, oh, you're excited about this? Well, you just learned math. So you're excited about math. And it's a really great thing. I really love it. And just kind of showing students that there is no right brain and no left brain. Everything exists together at the same time, always and forever. And you can be whatever kind of academic you want to be. If you're good at one thing, that's because you really love it and not because your brain doesn't understand the other thing. I always hated that. Like, when I was in math classes and it's like, oh, it's because you just have a more like right brain focus. I'm like, no, I get it.
I got that message all the time and never fully understood what it meant. Like, I was about to interrupt you to say, like, what does left brain, right brain mean? Because I'm not even sure I know. Are those terms you use a lot? Can you explain them to us?
Yeah, so absolutely. So left brain and right brain, how it was always used in the vernacular that I'm comfortable with, is that left brain are going to be your more number focused academic pursuits, like your math, technology, education, I'm sorry, engineering, not education, sciences. So left brain is your STEM, right? And then your right brain is your creativity, your English, your theater, your music. But now with this global acceptance of STEAM, which is STEM with the A in it, we've kind of come to an understanding that there is no left brain or right brain. You are a full brain. You are a full person, and you can just enjoy different avenues of academics. And it's also a great way for students. We, you know, at the Film Academy, we get a lot of, you know, theater students and creative-based students who've always been told they're not very good at math or science or anything. And it's like, no, you guys actually really are. You are good. You
have to learn. Listeners, I'm raising my hand because that was me. Yes. And those messages stick with you.
Yeah, it's amazing to see kids. You know, I'm teaching them photography. They love photography. And I'm like, oh, actually, like, we just learned a little bit of geometry here. And they're like, what? Like, I haven't paid attention to class all year. And I'm like, well, now you are. so yeah, it's just a really great way to show students that education is always an evolving field. Nothing we do this year is what we did last year or what they'll do the year after us. And so it's a really great way to show students that, you know, things are different now. You can enjoy whatever you want to enjoy in whatever medium you want to enjoy it in.
Yeah. And I feel like for a long time, schools worked hard to keep subjects siloed. So you did your math in your math classroom, and then that math did not spill over to reading, which did not spill over to music. And that is changing as we learn more about the whole brain and the way that it works together. But it sounds like you are really leaning into that on purpose. And so you're doing something, and this is the math piece, and this is the science piece, and this is the art piece, and they have to work together. Otherwise, this whole thing is going to fall apart. You need everything in order to make this project happen.
That's exactly what we do. So I, as my role, I focus mostly on our week-long, either international or domestic programs. So we have a lot of really great after-school and summer opportunities, but I'm more of the week-long program side. And in those programs, we have projects that the students complete. They work all week to work on one project, and they learn that the class they take on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday directly filters into their project, and they build off of each other. So it's you know, like you're putting together a puzzle, and at the end of the week, you get to present that puzzle. So that's a perfect description of what, you know, the core of the education is that we provide to the students, and the subjects vary. So we have film ones, we have you know, more physics heavy ones. We have coding. So it's just, you know, same kind of base model that we put to different curriculums.
I mean, that's the way humans learn, right? When you build a house, you build the foundation, and then you build the first floor, and then you build the second floor. So that makes a lot of sense. And that actually brings me to my next question. I stalked you on LinkedIn before this and saw that you have all kinds of different experience and different things. So can you tell us about your journey to technology and to creative robotics? Because we met talking about robots. And So how, with all of the things that you've studied and all of the interests that you have, did you find your way to STEAM and to robotics?
Yeah, as I said, I have a really weird arsenal of degrees, and none of them are in technology, but all of them rely heavily on technology. And when you're in film, forget how tech heavy the industry actually is. Like the new software is constantly created, and the cameras that you're holding and everything that you're doing is actually really tech heavy. And so I was having a conversation with some science teachers, actually at ISTE, which is super great. I'm super excited to go next year. And they were like, you know, like everything you do is actually really tech focused. You just teach it in the creative way. And so we kind of, you know, we'd always been doing that, but that conversation helped me realize that. And so I guess my technology journey is sort of one of discovery, that I've always actually been using technologies. You know, for example, with my film students, I love to edit, I love post-production, and I love the cameras. So, you know, while I'm sitting there teaching them programs like DaVinci Resolve or Premiere or, you know, Avid for the really, really old film students, I'm like, oh, I'm actually teaching you like a really intense form of software that you have to learn another language to understand, not a coding language, but kind of one really similar. And so I guess, yeah, my journey is me discovering that I've been doing it the whole time. So now it's my creative robotics journey is just beginning. So we're just beginning that journey because we're discovering new ones that we can use in the programs that we teach the kids with. And we do a lot of project-based learning. Mm-hmm. So creative robotics is perfect for that, giving them, you know, real-world situations with these products, like the Bird Brain products. Yeah, I would say that it's a journey that I've always been on, but I'm only just understanding that I've always been on it.
Well, and as soon as you realize that you're on that path and you just all of a sudden are noticing all of these different things, it's like, oh, so if I have the skills to do this, then I bet those skills could translate over here. And since I can run this camera and run this program, I bet this robot isn't that far off. And that's creative. And that's magic for students too, when they realize the skill that they've learned kind of in isolation can go all of these different places and they have the keys to different careers and different subjects. It's so exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. And we also bring in a lot of experts. So, you know, my program teaches coding. I'm not a coding expert. So I bring in someone who does teach coding. And it's funny how we all, you know, sit around at the dinner table at the end of the day. And it's like, oh, so that's like coding. Well, when I use Avid, I do kind of the same thing in a different language. And we're all like, oh, we do the same thing, but in a different language. We all like to show the students that we all have the same keys. We just use them to open different doors. So my door opens this one, my coding instructor opened his door, you know, he's wanting to pursue game development. So it's just, yeah, we all have the same blocks that we're giving them. We're giving them all the keys that we have and they can go open whatever door they want to. Bigger doors than I hope I ever get to see because they deserve it.
Oh, that's such an empowering message. Like you've got the keys and you can make them work in any door. So where are you going to go and what are you going to do? And having a role model that has studied different things and worked in different places and is still figuring out their journey, I think is also very empowering because for young people, there can be a little bit of, I pick my path, I study, I work, and that's where I stay, which is not really the reality of the workforce anymore. And so someone who's like, I like this and I'm doing that, that must be exciting for them too.
I'm super transparent with my students and any of the students that, you know, most of my students I only see for 1 week and then I never see them again. And it makes me sad until they find me on LinkedIn. That was a scary day, let me tell you. I'm always transparent with them. I was like, I have a criminal justice bachelor's degree. I have a master's in counterterrorism. I was like, I thought that I was going to do this one thing with my entire life. And this amazing opportunity opened up and, you know, I'm kind of good at it. So, and I had no idea. I had no plan for this. And it ended up being the perfect thing. So I'm super transparent with them because that you're right. All they get told is, okay, so pick your degree when you're 17 and it's going to be the thing you do for the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. I didn't even make it like 4 years until I changed my mind. So
talking about it as a skill set and a toolbox and a set of keys, you know, what kind of things do you think you want to do in the future? And what skills and expertise do you want to collect to help you get there to kind of build your skill set? Do the kids really respond to that?
They do. And I think it helps that they hear it from pretty much everyone they meet, you know, all of my instructors and the other teachers. And because we have a lot of different staff members who are there throughout the week, but we all have very similar journeys. And I think after they, and also if all of our staff members come from different backgrounds, we are all different people, we have different experiences, but we're all saying this one thing. We're all saying the same thing. We have a common denominator here. Mm-hmm. And I think the students start to realize that, oh, okay, so you did this and it worked out for you, or maybe it didn't work out for you, but you still did it and you still tried it. I think it makes them start to believe you after a while when you're there hearing it from different people of all different walks of life, of all different, you know, everything, but we're all saying the same thing. I think if you were to just tell a student like, oh yeah, it'll be fine, you can change your mind later, they'll be like, okay, but like, where's the proof? And I think, mm-hmm. you know, the staff that I have, were kind of like the proof in the pudding. And I think that when you talk to a student in not these big, scary, like real world, it, you know, like you have to go to college and you have to get this degree if you want to do this. And if you don't go to college, it's like, you know, film students, you know, sometimes don't have to go to college. They have to get real world experience. And so they get different. And it's just, you know, being honest with them. I think a lot of people forget that kids are still people and they can still process things and they can still mm-hmm. handle the truth. So, yeah, I think just being honest with them and, you know, showing them the proof in the pudding, I think makes them believe it and makes them believe in themselves, which is really cool.
I mean, you've just outlined like the biggest challenge and reward of teaching, right? Is like, if I say it a million times, they'll pick it up, right?
Yeah.
And if I do it in front of them and say it a million times, that'll help even more. You know, you have this message you want to get across. So it sounds like teaching in theme parks and the places that you go does have a lot in common with teaching in the classroom.
Oh, absolutely.
Can you share a challenging moment and a rewarding moment from your experience over the past year with Florida Film Academy?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we run pretty unique programs. And so these moments are kind of unique to those programs, but not unique to teaching, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of programs where we have students that come and English is their second language, and it's an ESL program. So I help them out as much as I can, but I want them to get their English foundation, like their knowledge. And, you know, they're looking at things. I had a group, we actually just had a program in October. And I had a group, they were a smaller group. They were so scared of everything. They were terrified on the first 2 days. They didn't believe in themselves. They didn't think they could do it. And sometimes the language barrier would get in the way where I'm like hyping them up so much, but I don't think they wanted to believe me that I believed in them. I don't know what it was. But these guys, you know, we had to hold their hand a little bit extra, and it was absolutely worth it, because at the very end of, you know, sitting with them every single day, helping them with anything they need and helping everybody else, obviously, but we had a group full of really bright type A personalities who were all wonderful students, and these little guys who were a little bit more introverted than everybody else, and so I think they felt a little bit more isolated. They won the competition, they won the program, they're going to Tokyo in 2 years. So I think, you know, I don't really know how challenging it is, because it's your job, you know, as an educator, you show up for these students in whatever form they need it to be. And for these guys, it was just a little bit, you know, sitting with them a little longer, explaining things a little more to them, getting my staff member who did speak their language. I say it, she says it. We're making sure they understand absolutely everything. Mm-hmm. But that's how rewarding it was when Clementina, my staff member, and I, we were sitting next to each other when the winners got announced, and we have tears in our eyes.
Oh my gosh.
Crying. It's like, oh my God, after all of their hard work, because they worked so hard. So yeah, that was probably the most rewarding and I guess challenging in a way, because maybe I want to amend my statement. Sometimes the most challenging thing as an educator is stopping yourself from doing it for them.
Oh boy, I can connect with that. Yes.
And so I'm working with these kids and I'm like, you have to understand it yourself, but you have the answer right there. Just let me show you how you get from there to there, but I can't. Because if I show you, you won't understand how I got there. Mm-hmm. So I think it kind of makes you pull your hair out sometimes when your students are, they're there, they're on it. They have the answer, but they're just looking at it the wrong way. And you have to let them fail. But they're your kids. You don't want them to fail. Mm-hmm. So I think that's probably my most challenging. But then for that to be the reward, it was the best. I'm just cry about it right now.
I would watch a movie about them making that movie, yeah, just from like the way you described that.
They were amazing. And they, you know, the look on their faces when they won and they realized that they did it. Like we didn't do anything for them except help them. And that's why you put up with that challenge, because they did it. You for them, they don't have any doubts about who actually won that competition. They know their hard work paid off.
And as you're supporting and watching, sometimes they go about things in a different way than you would. I know I teach middle school and I have a hard time because my brain is telling me they're doing that wrong. And I have to remind myself, there is no wrong. Yes. Like they're going to figure it out, and they might come at it from a different angle, and they might not watch that tutorial that I really want them to watch right now. But if they figure out that they can't get that sensor to work, they're going to watch the tutorial later, or they're going to ask somebody else. Yes. Does the same thing kind of happen in film where you're like, oh, I just have to bite my fingernails and watch?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, film is so subjective that it's honestly kind of hard sometimes to steer them in the right direction, because like, a film will happen based on a huge mistake that was never meant to happen, but now it's the greatest movie ever. Jaws, perfect example. And so sometimes I am teaching them and they're doing, you know, as long as it's not anything that's going to break the camera, yes. I'll just kind of let them, you know, make their mistake. But sometimes it's like, guys, I promise you, if this is a horror movie you want to make, none of you should be wearing that. None of you should be saying this. And it's done totally differently. But then that moment when they're watching it back, when they put it into the software and they're watching it back, they're like, oh, okay, we get it now. And I'm like, thank you. It's like the biggest I told you so moment, but I never told you, so I can't told you so. But,
but I'm yelling it in my own head, because that's the only place it's appropriate for me. Yeah.
It's like, and especially because, you know, a lot of the things that the students that I encounter do is either a competition or they submit it to a film festival or mm-hmm. So I don't want to ever do anything for them, because there have been times when I've won a competition and I got a lot of help from a teacher and I did question. I was like, well, did that teacher do it for me or did I do it? I'm like, mm-hmm. I started to doubt myself. And I'm like, okay, I definitely want to make sure none of these kids ever doubt themselves. So I'm going to let you run face first into a wall. And then I'll help you, because the prize and the victory will be even better at the end.
So you've dropped a lot of gems of advice while you're talking, but I do want to give you the chance to really think it through and give it its own answer. What advice would you give to teachers looking to start teaching with technology, with creative robotics, with this kind of more creativity-focused mindset that can feel a little scary when you're first getting started?
I think my biggest piece of advice is actually geared towards the teachers who are a little bit like me. They don't have the tech background. They don't mm-hmm. have the, and you know, maybe even if you do have the tech background and you still feel this way, but definitely for the people like me who came from social sciences or mm-hmm. something like that, it is not a foreign concept. You just have to allow yourself to admit that you understand it. I think for a really long time, I was, well, I'm never going to get this. I'm never going to be able to teach physics. I have a criminal justice degree. When am I ever going to be able to teach physics? And I sat down and I was reading the material and I was, you know, I actually do the projects that the kids do so I can make sure I understand it. And I'm like, oh, conceptual physics isn't actually that hard. I maybe just had a bad physics teacher in high school. I think there's sometimes a self-imposed barrier to entry from people who don't have a tech background. And maybe even if you do and you haven't touched it in a while, or, you know, mm-hmm. we all doubt ourselves apply to anybody, but I think never back away from something like creative robotics or a cool software or a cool technology because you're afraid that you are not the right person to teach it, quote unquote, because we are all the right person to teach with creative technology and creative robotics. And I think that some of us have scars from like the way that math and sciences used to be taught a long time ago.
Yeah.
And it just creates this doubt within ourselves, but there's nothing to fear. Everything makes sense. It's a trial and error. You know, when I was like teaching myself how to use this coding software. I don't know how to code, but I had to understand the software enough to teach to the other students. And it's like, okay, I have no idea what I'm doing. And after about 3 days, I was like, I have a better idea of what I'm doing.
I feel a little better than I did before.
It's like, and it, like, it fits everywhere. I think that's another thing I would say to people. It's like, if you're teaching English or if you're literature, whatever the subject is, if you're teaching art or photography or any of those, you know, right brain subjects, it fits. It does. Mm. There is something that they, those softwares and technologies can do. And it benefits students so much to see that. So yeah, I think that would be my biggest piece of advice from someone who just overcame that hurdle. It's for everyone. It's not just for the left brain people. It's for all of us because we all have a full brain.
And even when you tackle that kind of imposter syndrome in one subject and you think, okay, it's done. I took care of it. But it's not. And then it comes again and again. I mean, it can be really, and depending on what field you're looking to dip your toe into, sometimes there's some gatekeeping from the inside as well. You know, sometimes it's, I don't think I'm capable of this. And sometimes it's, well, I've received a lot of messaging over time that I'm not capable of this. And this is not for me, especially women and people of color who are kept out of these fields sometimes on purpose. So being able to say like, okay, I'm not sure I can do it. And I've maybe received this messaging that says I can't do it, but I really think I can if I kind of push that discomfort aside and go for it.
Absolutely. The gatekeeping rings especially true as someone who works in film and now STEM. You know, there isn't a lot, or there wasn't, I'm going to amend that, there was not a lot of space for women and people of color and, you know, disabled people in that world. And now there is. And it's one of my favorite things to teach to students is that there is a place at any table you want to sit at. And if there isn't, you build a table, make it bigger. Because, you know, for a really long time, I had a lot of film classes that didn't have a lot. And this is just because, you know, as a woman, I can speak a little bit more personally to this specific topic, but there weren't a lot of girls in my film classes because they were like, oh, you know, we're not really directors. And, you know, we just want to do more of like the theater, the acting stuff. And I'm like, no, you do whatever you want. It's like, if you want to be a theater student, absolutely go and do it. But never feel like you can't be there because we're all allowed to be everywhere. And I think this coming generation, I refer to them as the TikTok generation because they're so much better at it than I am. I think they get that so well. And I'm honestly a little jealous that they get to grow up with that a little better than us millennials kind of. We had to realize it like halfway through. And I'm so excited for them. They don't have to worry about that kind of stuff. But for us educators who are a little older than them, who still have that gatekeeping fear, it can definitely be a setback, but it should never be a full stop.
Ooh, a setback, but not a full stop. That's something that I'm going to keep in my brain. That's a good way to talk to yourself, to be like, this is a setback and that's okay, but it's not a full stop.
Ooh. I need to make motivational posters. I think I've discovered my next career jump. Educating was great, but I'm going to be a motivational poster creator now.
Posters now. It's just a really good fit. Okay, Isabel, it's time for my favorite question. What makes you a flocking amazing educator?
I think brutal honesty and tough love. I never sugarcoat a single thing I say to those kids. If their scene that they just filmed was bad, I'm gonna let them know it wasn't that great. But I've, you know, as someone who believes in constructive criticism and teaching students, when they get it right, I've never seen them happier. So I think my, you know, kind of my tough love approach to my students sometimes, you know, now they're winning film festivals and they're winning, you know, these amazing competitions when they didn't think they could do it. I think honesty, we need to be honest to kids. Just be honest with them. They understand it and they can comprehend it and they can do so much more with it than if we try and skirt around things to spare their feelings. So yeah, and I'm funny. I think I'm the funniest teacher they've ever had. So, you know.
Those two things go really well together. Yeah. If you're going to be brutally honest and give them feedback that they don't want to hear, following it with a joke is really going to soften the landing, right?
Hey, when those kids win Oscars, I better be mentioned in those acceptance speeches. I want to be the first name they thank. They can thank their parents.
And to my funniest teacher ever, Miss Haynes, I remember. Oh my gosh. Isabel, thank you so much for chatting with me about just what it's like to be at Florida Film Academy and to be bringing STEAM and film and robotics and everything to these kids. It sounds like you have a really great job and like you are adding a lot to Florida Film Academy and bringing your magic to those kids.
Thank you so much for letting me ramble about all the things that I'm passionate about. And hopefully it just keeps continuing to grow. Hopefully next time we chat, I have even more programs to tell you about. So,
ooh, I hope so. And I'm going to share in the resources for this episode, I will share the links to Florida Film Academy. And I will also share the best way for people to get in contact with you, because I'm guessing that maybe some educators will hear this and think, you know, film sounds really great. Maybe that's something I should be doing with my students. Maybe I need a little bit of Isabel Haynes in my life.
Absolutely.
So we'll put your contact information on there too. Isabel, thanks again. It was really great to talk to you today.
Thank you so much.
All right, listeners, thank you for joining us for Flocking Amazing, the podcast for quick, bite-sized conversations with real teachers, sharing their real expertise and providing real inspiration to us all. We'll have a new teacher conversation dropping soon, so don't flocking miss it.